Hello, this is Ed Reedy from the Talking Information Center with today's reading from Reuters. Iran foreign minister met IAEA chief ahead of nuclear talks. Dubai and Budapest. Iran's foreign minister met with the UN nuclear watchdog chief on Monday ahead of talks between Washington and Tehran aimed at resolving a nuclear dispute. With few clear signs of compromise from either side and the threat of U.S. military action looming. Washington, which joined Israel in a wave of airstrikes on Iran in June, has ordered a second aircraft carrier group to the Middle East in the latest standoff with Tehran, in addition to other U.S. warships and aircraft that have already been deployed. Adding to the tension, Iran began a military drill on Monday in the Strait of Hormuz, a vital international waterway and oil export route from Gulf Arab states, who have been appealing for diplomacy to end the dispute. The U.S. and Iran renewed negotiations earlier this month, hoping to tackle their decades-long dispute over Tehran's nuclear program, which Washington, other Western states, and Israel all believe is aimed at building nuclear arms. Tehran denies this. Oil prices were little changed on Monday, with investors weighing the market implications of upcoming U.S.-Iran talks aimed at de-escalating frictions against a backdrop of expected OPEC plus supply increases. Scope of talks expands to missile stockpile. However, Washington has sought to expand the scope of talks to non-nuclear issues such as Iran's missile stockpile. Tehran says it is only willing to discuss curbs on its nuclear program in exchange for sanctions relief and won't accept zero uranium enrichment. It says its missile capabilities are off the table. Speaking during a visit to Hungary on Monday, U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said reaching a deal with Tehran would be hard. I think that there's an opportunity here to diplomatically reach an agreement that addresses the things we're concerned about. We'll be very open and welcoming to that. But I don't want to overstate it either. It's going to be hard. It's been very difficult for anyone to do real deals with Iran because we're dealing with radical Shia clerics who are making theological decisions, not geopolitical ones. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, said he was in Geneva to achieve a fair and equitable deal. What is not on the table? Submission before threats, Araghchi said on X. Iran has repeatedly threatened to close the Strait of Hormuz in retaliation against any attack which would choke a fifth of global oil flows and send crude prices sharply higher. The waterway connects the biggest Gulf oil producers such as Saudi Arabia, Iran, Iraq, and the United Arab Emirates with the Gulf of Oman and the Arabian Sea. Iran's Revolutionary Guards have conducted a drill named Smart Control of the Strait of Hormuz to test the readiness of the Guards' naval units to protect the waterway, the semi-official Tasnim news agency said on Monday. Intelligently using the geopolitical advantages of the Islamic Republic in the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman are among the main objectives of this exercise, Tasnim said. Iran's civil defense organization held a chemical defense drill in the PARS Special Economic Energy Zone on Monday to strengthen preparedness for potential chemical incidents in the energy hub located in southern Iran. Deputy Foreign Minister Majid Taghut Ravanchi on Sunday signaled Iran's willingness and readiness to compromise on its nuclear program in return for sanctions relief, telling the BBC that the ball was in America's court to prove that they wanted to do a deal. Prior to the U.S. joining Israel in striking Iranian nuclear sites in June, Iran-U.S. nuclear talks had stalled over Washington's demand that Tehran forego enrichment on its soil, which the U.S. views as a pathway to an Iranian nuclear weapon. Iran says its nuclear program is solely for civilian purposes and is ready to assuage concerns regarding nuclear weapons by building trust that enrichment is and will stay for peaceful purposes. Iran's foreign ministry said Aragachi had discussed cooperation with the International Atomic Energy Agency, as well as Tehran's technical point of view regarding nuclear talks with the U.S. during his meeting with IAEA head Rafael Grossi. IAEA seeks clarity of enriched uranium. The IAEA has been calling on Iran for months to say what happened to its stockpile of 440 kg, 970 pounds of highly enriched uranium following Israeli-U.S. strikes and let inspections fully resume, including in three key sites that were bombed in June last year, Natanz, Fordo, and Isfahan. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said on Sunday he told U.S. President Donald Trump last week that any U.S. deal with Iran must include the dismantling of Iran's nuclear infrastructure, not just stopping the enrichment process. Netanyahu said he is skeptical of a deal, but it must include enriched material leaving Iran. There shall be no enrichment capability, not stopping the enrichment process, but dismantling the equipment and the infrastructure that it allows you to enrich in the first place, he said. Robert Duvall, Tender Mercies Oscar winner, dies at 95, by Bill Trott. Oscar winner Robert Duvall, a versatile actor who made lasting impressions in a range of parts, from starring to supporting roles like the napalm-loving colonel of Apocalypse Now or the spectral Boo Radley in To Kill a Mockingbird, has died at age 95, his wife said in a Facebook post. The actor, who played Tom Hagen, a lawyer for the Corleone family in The Godfather and its first sequel, and starred in the TV miniseries Lonesome Dove, died peacefully on Sunday, according to the statement, which did not give a cause of death. For each of his many roles, Bob gave everything to his characters and to the truth of the human spirit they represented, Luciana Duvall said in the post. Duvall played forceful leaders such as Lieutenant Colonel Bull Meacham in The Great Santini and the title character in Stalin, as well as broken down and fallen characters in Tender Mercies and The Apostle. He won awards for both types of roles. Duvall, the son of a Navy admiral and an amateur actress, grew up in Annapolis, Maryland, after graduating from Principia College in Illinois and serving in the U.S. Army. He moved to New York, where he roomed with Dustin Hoffman and befriended Gene Hackman when the three were struggling acting students. After working on a variety of television shows, Duvall made a strong impression even in small roles, such as his first movie part as the mysterious recluse Boo Radley in To Kill a Mockingbird. Duvall got the part at the suggestion of the film's screenwriter Horton Foote, who had liked Duvall's work in one of his plays. Foote later wrote Tender Mercies, a 1983 film for which Duvall won the Academy Award for Best Actor as a washed-up country singer. 7 Oscar nominations. Perhaps Duvall's most memorable role came in Francis Ford Coppola's 1979 Vietnam epic Apocalypse Now, playing the off-kilter, surfing-obsessed Lieutenant Colonel Bill Kilgore. Duvall only received a few minutes of screen time, but almost stole the film as his character swaggered around a battlefield after a successful attack and exuberantly proclaimed, "I love the smell of napalm in the morning. It smelled like victory," Kilgore said. The role brought Duvall one of his 7 Academy Award nominations, Another was for Best Supporting Actor for Coppola's The Godfather, playing Tom Hagen, consigliere to the Corleone mafia family. Duvall appeared in the second Godfather film, but rejected the third because he considered the salary offer inadequate. Duvall also was nominated for Oscars for The Great Santini, The Apostle, A Civil Action, and The Judge in 2014. In all, he appeared in almost 100 movies. Duvall had a knack for playing cowboys. He won an Emmy for the television miniseries Broken Trail, appeared opposite John Wayne in True Grit, and picked up an Emmy nomination for the miniseries Lonesome Dove. He often said his portrayal of the genial lawman turned cowboy, Gus McRae, in Lonesome Dove was his favorite role. I think I nailed a very specific individual who represents something important in our history of the Western movement, Duvall told the New York Times. After that, I felt I could retire, that I'd done something. When he grew weary of Hollywood, Duvall made his own movies. He wrote, directed, and won an Oscar acting nomination for The Apostle, the story of a conflicted preacher. Duvall did the same with Assassination Tango, a movie that allowed him to exhibit his passion for the tango in Argentina, where he met his fourth wife, Luciana Pedraza. They were both born on January 5th, but were 41 years apart. Duvall split his time between Los Angeles, Argentina, and a 360-acre farm in Virginia, where he converted the barn into a tango dance hall. U.S. judge tells National Park Service to reinstall Philadelphia slavery exhibit by Chris Prentice. New York, a U.S. judge in Pennsylvania on Monday ordered the National Park Service to reinstall a slavery exhibit at a Philadelphia historic site pending the outcome of ongoing litigation after the city sued the federal government over its removal. The National Park Service last month dismantled and removed the exhibit in response to President Donald Trump's claims, which have been rejected by civil rights groups, of an anti-American ideology at historical and cultural institutions. The City of Philadelphia sued over the matter, accusing the Department of the Interior, which oversees the National Park Service, and top officials of breaking the law and asking a judge to restore the exhibit. On Monday, a federal judge for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania granted the city's request to temporarily block the federal government's changes and ordered the National Park Service to restore the exhibit pending the outcome of litigation. The court is now asked to determine whether the federal government has the power it claims to disassemble and disassemble historical truths when it has some domain over historical facts. Judge Cynthia Roof said in her opinion, it does not. Neither the National Park Service nor the City of Philadelphia responded immediately to requests for comment on the judge's order. The exhibit was at the President's House site in Independence National Historical Park, where the first U.S. President, George Washington, lived when the Pennsylvania city was the nation's capital. The President's House described the history of slavery and Washington's ownership of enslaved people. Civil rights groups have accused the Trump administration of rolling back social progress. Kremlin rejects claim it poisoned Navalny with dart frog toxin. Widow says truth is out, by Andrew Osborne. Moscow. The Kremlin on Monday flatly rejected accusations from five European countries that the Russian state had killed Alexei Navalny 2 years ago using toxin from poisoned dart frogs. But his widow said the truth had finally been proven. Navalny, President Vladimir Putin's most prominent domestic critic, died on February 16, 2024, in the Polar Wolf penal colony north of the Arctic Circle, about 1,200 miles northeast of Moscow. He was 47. His death, which the Russian state said was from natural causes, occurred a month before Putin was reelected for a fifth term in a landslide vote, which Western nations said was neither free nor fair due to censorship and a crackdown on opponents. Britain, France, Germany, Sweden, and the Netherlands said on Saturday that analysis of samples from Navalny's body had conclusively confirmed the presence of epibatatidine, a toxin found in poison dart frogs in South America and not found naturally in Russia. Navalny died while held in prison, meaning Russia had the means, motive, and opportunity to administer this poison to him, they said. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov rejected the allegations. "Naturally, we do not accept such accusations. We disagree with them. We consider them biased and not based on anything, and we strongly reject them," Peskov told reporters. Test results. Maria Zakharova, a spokeswoman for the Russian Foreign Ministry, previously said Moscow would provide relevant comment if and when the countries making the allegations released and detailed their test results. Until then, the state TASS news agency cited her as saying the allegations were merely propaganda aimed at diverting attention from pressing Western issues. The British government on Saturday declined to respond to a Reuters query about how the samples from Navalny's body were obtained or where they were assessed. The European joint statement referenced the 2018 Novichok poisoning in Salisbury, England, of former Russian agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter, suggesting that Moscow has form when it comes to using deadly poisons against its enemies. Russia denies involvement in the Salisbury incident. It also rejects British allegations that Moscow killed dissident Alexander Litvinenko in London in 2006 by lacing his tea with radioactive polonium-210. A group of 15 mostly European countries, but also including Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, issued a fresh statement on Monday, reiterating their demands for Russia to conduct a transparent investigation into Navalny's death. The statement, published on the German Foreign Ministry website, said that Russian human rights defenders were continuing Navalny's legacy and called on Moscow to release all political prisoners. The dart frog toxin allegations were made at the Munich Security Conference ahead of the second anniversary of Navalny's death on Monday. Yulia Navalnaya, his widow, who had alleged from the outset that her husband had been murdered by the Russian state, said on Monday that the findings provided the necessary proof to back her stance. "2 years, we have attained the truth, and we will also attain justice one day," Navalnaya wrote on X, above a photograph of her late husband smiling. Cuba's Havana piles with trash as U.S. chokehold halts garbage trucks. Garbage has begun to pile up on street corners in the Cuban capital of Havana, attracting hordes of flies and reeking of rotten food in one of the most visible impacts of the U.S. bid to prevent oil from reaching the Caribbean's largest island. State-run news outlet Cuba Debate reported this month that Havana, only 44 of 106 of its rubbish trucks were able to keep operating due to fuel shortages, slowing garbage collection. Cardboard boxes, used bags, plastic bottles, and rags piled up on street corners across the seafront capital, as some residents sorted through the waste looking for scraps they could reuse while motorists, pedestrians, and bikers are forced to circumvent the imposing heaps. "It's all over the city," said local resident Jose Ramon Cruz. "It's been more than 10 days since a garbage truck came." In other towns on the island, home to around 11 million people, residents took to social media to warn of the risks to public health. Cuba's government has implemented rationing measures to protect essential services in the country that was already suffering from severe shortages of food, fuel, and medicine. The country's oil supply has fallen off dramatically in 2 months. Venezuela, once Cuba's top supplier, effectively stopped sending shipments in mid-December. Mexico's government also said it was halting shipments after Washington threatened tariffs against countries that send supplies to Cuba. A Russian newspaper last week reported that Moscow was preparing to send crude and fuel cargoes to the communist-run island in the near future without giving a specific date. The United States has maintained an embargo on Cuba since the 1960s, but in recent months, the administration of President Donald Trump has hardened its stance, sanctioning vessels shipping oil to Cuba and threatening tariffs on suppliers. It argues the measures will pressure a political change in Cuba. The United Nations has long voted for the U.S. to end its embargo, and leaders from Mexico and Venezuela said blocking fuel could have serious humanitarian impacts. Big tech stocks lose billions as AI spending fears hit valuations. The world's most valuable technology stocks have suffered sharp declines in market value this year after years of outsized gains as investors question whether heavy spending on AI will generate sufficient returns to justify the lofty valuations. Microsoft shares have fallen about 17% year-to-year on concerns over risks to its AI business and growing competition from Google's latest Gemini model and Anthropic's Claude Cowork AI agent, wiping roughly $613 billion off its market value to about $2.98 trillion as of Friday. Amazon has shed around 13.85% so far this year, erasing about $343 billion in market value and leaving the company valued at roughly $2.13 trillion. Earlier this month, Amazon said it expects capital spending to jump more than 50% this year. NVIDIA, Apple, and Alphabet have also seen their market values decline by 89.67 billion dollars, 256.44 billion and 87.96 billion dollars respectively since the start of 2026 to 4.44 trillion, 3.76 trillion and 3.7 trillion. The pullback signals a broader shift in market psychology, with investors moving from rewarding long-term AI ambitions to demanding near-term earnings visibility after years of speculative enthusiasm. By contrast, TSMC, Samsung Electronics, and Walmart have added $293.89 billion, $272.88 billion, and $179.17 billion in market value, respectively, over the same period, lifting their values to $1.58 trillion, $817 billion, and $1.07 trillion, respectively. Trump versus Bad Bunny, a Super Bowl feud with possible midterm consequences. By Andrea Shalale, Tim Reed, and David Hood Nuno. Washington, President Donald Trump's attack on Puerto Rican superstar Bad Bunny's Super Bowl halftime show, including a gripe that it was mostly in Spanish, has alarmed some Republican Hispanic strategists, politicians, and business leaders who warn it risks further eroding his support among Latino voters ahead of November's congressional elections. Hispanics were central to the coalition that powered Trump's re-election in 2024, even after inflammatory rhetoric on the campaign trail, including a comedian calling the U.S. territory of Puerto Rico a floating island of garbage at one of Trump's rallies. But their support has softened amid continued high prices, discontent over tariffs, and his administration's aggressive immigration enforcement tactics. Some of Trump's staunchest Latino allies called Republican attacks on the global music star in on a performance widely seen as a rare primetime celebration of Latino culture a political misstep as the party fights to hold its razor-thin majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. Several key House races are unfolding in Hispanic-heavy districts, including in California, Arizona, and Colorado. It's going to do us more damage than good, said Vianza Rodriguez, a former Trump administration official who served as deputy Hispanic communication director for the Republican National Committee during the 2024 campaign. That shouldn't have been a battle to have been picked culturally. Rodriguez, who is Puerto Rican, said she remains an avid Trump supporter. Trump slammed Bad Bunny's February 8th halftime show as an affront to the greatness of America and a slap in the face to the country. Nobody understands a word this guy is saying, Trump wrote on his social media account, calling the dancing disgusting and unsuitable for children. Even longtime Trump critics like Mike Madrid were baffled by the president's outburst. To see them doubling down on alienating the single most critical constituency they need for survival is beyond belief, said Madrid, a Republican strategist who is an expert on Latino voting trends. Some Hispanics already souring on Trump. Hispanics are the largest ethnic minority in the United States, accounting for about a fifth of the population. Trump received 48% of the Hispanic vote in 2024, more than any Republican presidential candidate in history, up from the 36% share he garnered in 2020, according to the nonpartisan Pew Research Center. But a November survey of more than 5,000 Latino voters by Pew showed Trump is down 12 percentage points among those who backed him in 2024. At the beginning of his second term in January 2025, 93% of Latinos who voted for him approved of the job he was doing. 10 months later, that had fallen to 81%. Abigail Jackson, a White House spokeswoman, did not respond to question about Trump's weakening Latino support. She said Trump received historic support from Latino voters in 2024 based on his promises to enforce our immigration laws, deport criminal illegal aliens, and tackle Joe Biden's inflation crisis. He's now fulfilling those promises. But Javier Palomares, president of the U.S. Hispanic Business Council, said many small business owners feel Trump has failed to deliver lower prices and his Bad Bunny comments could add to their disillusionment. It's just another illustration of a president who is woefully shooting himself in the foot at every chance he possibly gets, Palomares said. He said that just before the 2024 election, 70% of his members in an internal survey believed Trump was the best candidate to fix the economy. Now that number has dropped to 40%. Latino-owned businesses in Minneapolis are reporting a 70% drop in sales since the immigration crackdown there began, said Ramiro Cavazo, president of the U.S. Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Trump plans travel to key districts. Several Hispanic conservatives told Reuters they weren't offended by Trump's comments about Bad Bunny, whose music isn't universally embraced by the diverse Latino community. Still, he should choose his words more carefully, they said. Everybody agrees that we wish he would hold his mouth and hold his temper and be less impulsive, said Denise Galvez Torres, who co-founded Latinos for Trump for his first run for office in 2016. Nevertheless, she agrees with Trump's criticism of the artists and defended the president's comments about Bad Bunny's use of Spanish, saying the singer's Puerto Rican slang and lack of enunciation can make his lyrics hard to understand. One source close to the White House said Trump needs to better engage with Latino and black voters who were part of his winning coalition, warning the Bad Bunny episode could hasten their shift back to Democratic candidates. The source, who has been in touch with officials about midterm election strategy, said there are plans for Trump to travel to districts in border areas and those with large Latino populations. Rodriguez, the former Trump administration official, said even though she expected the Bad Bunny debate to die down, Republicans should make more use of Spanish language spokespeople in addressing immigration raids and aggressively targeting the Latino vote. My biggest advice would be for them to not repeat the same mistakes as with the Democrats, who lost a big segment of the Latino population for a reason, because they felt like they were being taken for granted, she said. Climate Challenge, A Decade After Paris Agreement, by Canon Svegeli. 10 years after the Paris Agreement took effect, newly released climate data sets show the world warming at an accelerating pace, with 2025 ranking among the three hottest years ever recorded, and ocean heat and sea levels crossing new thresholds. U.S. President Donald Trump, a climate change skeptic, has rolled back a series of environmental policies over the past year and has described climate change as a hoax, a stance which has helped lead to the environmental agenda being challenged across the globe. Although countries agreed to deal to pledge more funding for poorer countries to adapt to extreme weather at the annual United Nations meeting in Brazil last year, they failed to agree on more explicit plans to phase out fossil fuels and strengthen emissions-cutting plans. Data from some of the world's leading scientific agencies shows global warming has sped up markedly since the mid-2010s. Emissions, a widening gap. The World Meteorological Organization, WMO, Global Atmosphere Watch Network, shows concentrations of carbon dioxide, methane, and nitrous oxide climbing to record highs, driving the temperature spike observed from 2023 to 2025, scientists say. Global fossil fuel carbon dioxide emissions are projected to climb to a record 38.1 billion tons in 2025, driven by rising coal, oil, and gas use despite rapid growth in renewable energy, according to the latest Global Carbon Budget report. The report, produced by an international team of more than 130 scientists, estimates global fossil fuel CO2 emissions will rise 1.1% next year, pushing atmospheric CO2 concentrations to roughly 52% above pre-industrial average. Emissions are projected to increase in China, India, the United States, and the European Union, while falling in Japan, although China has made significant investments in renewable energy. Temperatures, a decade of acceleration. NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, GISS, said the Earth's surface in 2025 was 1.19 centigrade above the 1951 to 1980 average, effectively tying with 2023 as one of the warmest years ever measured. The WMO's consolidated database places 2025 at 1.44 centigrade above pre-industrial levels, ranking it among the top three warmest years over the 176 years of recorded temperatures. Global anomalies in surface air temperature in 2025. Change in temperature compared to 1991 to 2020 reference period. The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, 2025 Arctic Report Card confirmed that October 2024 to September 2025 was the warmest period since 1900, and the region continues to warm more than twice as fast as the global average. Sea ice extent reached the lowest winter maximum ever recorded in March 2025 at about 14.47 million square kilometers, according to the U.S. National Ice Center. Arctic ice shrank in 10 years since the Paris Agreement. The ocean absorbed record amounts of heat in 2025, setting a new global high for upper ocean heat content, according to NOAA and Berkeley Earth. Sea levels measured by tide gauges and satellites continue to rise. the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change projects a 0.2 to 0.29 meter rise by 2050 relative to 1995 to 2014. Global cities with millions of people at risk from sea level rise. Projected rise in sea level by 2050 under a moderate carbon emission scenario in meters. EU ill-prepared for worsening climate change, advisors say, by Kate Abnett. Brussels, the European Union is not prepared for worsening climate change and should urgently step up its investments to protect people and infrastructure from mounting floods, wildfires, and severe heat waves, its independent advisor said on Tuesday. Climate change has made Europe the world's fastest warming continent, according to the World Meteorological Organization, driving more frequent and intense heat waves, flooding, coastal destruction, and storms. The economic damage to European infrastructure and buildings from weather and climate extremes is now 45 billion euros, $53.34 billion per year, five times higher than in the 1980s. EU data show. While the EU has ambitious targets to cut greenhouse gases, the main cause of climate change, its efforts have fallen short on adapting to the extreme weather climate change is already fueling, according to the EU advisors, the European Scientific Advisory Board on Climate Change. It is a lack of coherence, a lack of coordination, and a lack of budget, said the advisory board's chair, Ottmar Endenhofer. Without stronger preparations, extreme weather will further harm the EU's competitiveness, straining public budgets, and increasing security risks, the advisors said. They recommended the EU agree to prepare across all member states for risks associated with 2.8 to 3.3 centigrade of warming by 2100. This should be used to develop policies to help people and businesses adapt, the advisors said. For example, ensuring housing is not built in flood-exposed areas, planning support for drought-hit farmers, or designing cities to help people stay cool when temperatures spike. The average global temperature is now 1.4 centigrade higher than in pre-industrial times. Countries' latest national climate pledges, if achieved, would still lead to 2.3 to 2.5 centigrade of global warming this century, according to the UN. The EU advisor said another key area is investing in public early warning systems and increasing insurance coverage, for example, by considering EU-level reinsurance. Only a quarter of climate-related economic losses in the EU are currently insured. The European Commission will propose a new strategy on climate resilience later this year, following weather disasters, including 2023 floods in Slovenia, whose reconstruction costs equaled 11% of the country's GDP, and Europe's worst wildfire season on record last year. Guthrie family members not suspects in Arizona kidnapping, sheriff says, by Herbert Villaraja and Hannah Lang. Tucson, Arizona, Nancy Guthrie's family members have been cleared as possible suspects in her abduction, Pima County Sheriff Chris Nanos said on Monday, as the case involving the mother of Today Show host co-anchor Savannah Guthrie entered its third week. Guthrie's family, which includes all siblings and spouses, have been cooperative and gracious as authorities investigate the kidnapping, Nanos said. To suggest otherwise is not only wrong, it is cruel, he said in a statement. The Guthrie family are victims, plain and simple. Investigators on Sunday said they had obtained a DNA sample from a glove that was found near 84-year-old Nancy Guthrie's Arizona home and appears to match the pair worn by a masked prowler seen in doorbell camera footage before she was abducted 2 weeks ago. Nancy Guthrie was last seen on January 31st when she was dropped off at her home near Tucson by her family after she had dined with them and was reported missing by relatives the following day, authorities have said. Nanos has said the elder Guthrie was extremely limited in her physical mobility and could not have left her home unassisted, leading investigators to conclude early on that she had been taken against her will. no proof of life has surfaced. At least two purported ransom notes have surfaced since she vanished, both of them delivered initially to news media outlets. There has been no known direct contact between any suspects and Guthrie's family or authorities. Traces of blood found on her front porch were confirmed by DNA tests to have come from Guthrie, officials said last week. Law enforcement and family members have described her as being in frail health and in need of daily medication to survive. She also has a pacemaker. Savannah Guthrie, 54, co-anchor of the popular NBC News morning show Today, has posted several video messages along with her brother, Cameron Guthrie, and sister, Annie Guthrie, pleading for their mother's return and appealing for the public's help in solving the case. Nanos has said Reuters has told Reuters that no proof of life has surfaced since the abduction, but added that there's not been any proof of death either, saying his working presumption is that Nancy Guthrie remains alive. In an interview with the New York Post on Sunday, U.S. President Donald Trump demanded that Guthrie's kidnappers immediately release her unharmed, suggesting he would want the U.S. Justice Department to seek the death penalty if Guthrie is found dead. Authorities would first need to find and convict a suspect before considering sentencing. Anderson Cooper leaving 60 Minutes program in latest CBS News shakeup. Host Anderson Cooper attends the Allen Company Sun Valley Media and Technology Conference. Anderson Cooper is leaving CBS News 60 Minutes program after nearly two decades in the latest staffing shakeup to hit the storied news magazine and network. Cooper has been a 60 Minutes correspondent through a deal between Paramount, Skydance, owned CBS News, and Warner Brothers Discovery. CNN since the 2006-2007 season, according to his page on the CBS News website. For nearly 20 years, I've been able to balance my jobs at CNN and CBS, but I have little kids now, and I want to spend as much time with them as possible while they still want to spend time, Cooper said in a statement on Monday. Cooper is the latest high-profile journalist to cut ties with CBS News since the arrival of Barry Weiss as the network's new editor-in-chief in October, following Paramount Skydance's purchase of her outlet, The Free Press. Weiss unveiled her strategy in January, saying she would add 19 new contributors and focus on bringing a streaming mentality to the network, which has consistently trailed in ratings to rivals ABC and NBC. She's trying to revive the third-place broadcast news network, which has been losing viewers in the age of social media and online information. Weiss has expressed interest in bringing Cooper to CBS News on a full-time basis, including the possibility of him anchoring the CBS Evening News program, according to a Puck News report. Paramount Skydance did not immediately respond to Reuters' request for comment. Since the launch of CNN's primetime television news program, Anderson Cooper 360, Cooper has covered major global news events ranging from U.S. presidential inaugurations and political conventions to the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting. He joined CNN in 2001 and has reported on the Iraq War, Hurricane Katrina, and the Gulf of Mexico oil spill. Cooper signed a new contract with CNN last year. Lachlan Cartwright's Breaker newsletter first reported Cooper's departure from 60 Minutes. Inevitable U.S. versus Canada ice hockey final, but this time the ice has tilted, by Trevor Steins. Milan. Canada and the United States will play out another chapter in their long-standing rivalry after setting up the almost inevitable Olympic women's ice hockey final on Monday. But this time the Americans have flipped the script and tilted the ice in their favor. The U.S. strolled to a 5-0 win over Sweden in their semifinal, while Canada struggled to see off a dogged Switzerland, winning 2-1, despite outshooting their opponents 46-8. Women's ice hockey entered the Olympics at the 1998 Games, and for the 8th consecutive time, either Canada or the U.S. will take the gold medal on Thursday at Santigua Arena. You want to beat the best teams, and I think for women's hockey, that's the best matchup you can ask for, Canada goaltender Anne-Renée Desbien said. It's going to be intense. It's going to be competitive. Defending champions Canada, who have 5 golds, arrived at the games playing second fiddle to the U.S. after the Americans had won their 6 most recent meetings, and they continued taming the Canadians in Milan. The U.S. handed Canada their first ever shutout loss when they met in the group stage, a 5-0 defeat, which will have stung more than the whitewash they suffered at the hands of the Americans in the 4-game rivalry series in November and December. On that occasion, the U.S. also ran out easy winners, outscoring the Canadians 27-4 across the series, which included a 10-4 win. After they had also beaten Canada twice when winning last year's World Championship. Still, Canada stuck with a tried and tested roster, keeping faith with veterans and all their players from the PWHL, while the U.S. went for a blend of youth and experience with 7 other squads still playing college hockey. Total domination. The U.S. have been utterly dominant in Milan, the only unbeaten team in the tournament, scoring 31 goals across 6 games and conceding just 1. In their opening match, they have scored more than 1 first period goal in only 1 game. Ironically, came against Canada, as the other teams managed to hold out until the U.S. seized complete control. Believe it or not, we have been challenged, U.S. defender Layla Edwards said. We have just overcome it and succeeded. We will take what we can get and hopefully come out on top. Canada has beaten the U.S. in 4 of the 6 finals and will look to use their most recent humbling as fuel to retain their title. I honestly think it makes us more hungry, Canada forward Julia Gosling said after Monday's semifinal. It's a gold medal game. Anything can happen. Trump says he will be involved indirectly in Iran talks, by Steve Holland. U.S. President Donald Trump said on Monday that he would be involved indirectly in high-stakes talks between Iran and the U.S. over Tehran's nuclear program set for Tuesday in Geneva, adding he believed Tehran wanted to make a deal. I'll be involved in those talks indirectly, and they'll be very important, Trump told reporters aboard Air Force One. Tensions are soaring ahead of the talks, with the U.S. deploying a 2nd aircraft carrier to the Middle East. The U.S. military is preparing for the possibility of a sustained military campaign if the talks do not succeed, U.S. officials have told Reuters. Asked about the prospects for a deal, Trump said Iran has long sought a tough posture in negotiations, but learned the consequences of that approach last summer when the U.S. bombed Iranian nuclear sites. Trump suggested Tehran was motivated this time to negotiate. I don't think they want the consequences of not making a deal, Trump said. Washington pushes Tehran to forego enrichment. Prior to the U.S. strikes in June, U.S.-Iran nuclear talks had stalled over Washington's demand that Tehran forego enrichment on its soil, which the U.S. views as a pathway to an Iranian nuclear weapon. We could have had a deal instead of sending the B-52s in to knock out their nuclear potential. And we had to send the B-52s, Trump said, referring to the bat-winged U.S. stealth bombers that carried out the bombs. That's B-2s. I hope they're going to be more reasonable. Their remarks contrast with those by the U.S. president on Friday when he embraced potential regime change in Iran and lamented decades of failed talks. Iran's foreign minister, Abbas Araghchi, met with the UN nuclear watchdog chief on Monday, saying in a post on X he was in Geneva to achieve a fair and equitable deal. What is not on the table, submission before threats, Aragachi said. Questions about uranium stockpile. The International Atomic Energy Agency has been calling on Iran for months to say what happened to its stockpile of 440 kg, 970 pounds, of highly enriched uranium following Israeli-U.S. strikes and let inspections fully resume, including in three key sites that were bombed in June last year, Natanz, Fordo, and Isfahan. Iran has repeatedly threatened to close the Strait of Hormuz in retaliation against any attack, which would choke a fifth of global oil flows and send crude prices sharply higher. Exclusive U.S. military preparing potentially weeks-long Iran operations by Phil Stewart and Idris Alay. Washington, the U.S. military is preparing for the possibility of sustained weeks-long operations against Iran if President Donald Trump orders an attack. Two U.S. officials told Reuters in what could become a far more serious conflict than previously seen between the countries. The disclosure by the officials, who spoke on condition of anonymity due to the sensitive nature of the planning, raises the stakes for the diplomacy underway between the United States and Iran. U.S. envoys Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner will hold negotiations with Iran on Tuesday in Geneva, with representatives from Oman acting as mediators. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio cautioned on Saturday that while Trump's preference was to reach a deal with Tehran, that's very hard to do. Meanwhile, Trump has amassed military forces in the region, raising fears of new military action. U.S. officials said on Friday the Pentagon was sending an additional aircraft carrier to the Middle East, adding thousands more troops along with fighter aircraft, guided missile destroyers, and other firepower capable of waging attacks and defending against them. Trump, speaking on Friday after a military event at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, openly floated the possibility of changing the government in Iran, saying it seems like that would be the best thing that could happen. He declined to share who he wanted to take over Iran, but said there are people. For 47 years, they've been talking and talking and talking, Trump said. Trump has long voiced skepticism about sending ground troops into Iran, saying last year the last thing you want to do is ground forces. And the kinds of U.S. firepower arrayed in the Middle East so far suggest options for strikes primarily by air and naval forces. In Venezuela, Trump demonstrated a willingness to rely also on special operations forces to seize that country's president, Nicolas Maduro, in a raid last month. Asked for comment on the preparations for a potentially sustained U.S. military operation, White House spokesperson Anna Kelly said, President Trump has all options on the table with regard to Iran. He listens to a variety of perspectives on any given issue, but makes the final decision based on what is best for our country and national security, Kelly said. The Pentagon declined to comment. The United States sent two aircraft carriers to the region last year when it carried out strikes against Iranian nuclear sites. However, June's Midnight Hammer operation was essentially a one-off U.S. attack with stealth bombers flying from the United States to strike Iranian nuclear facilities. Iran staged a very limited retaliatory strike on a U.S. base in Qatar. The planning underway this time is more complex, the official said. In a sustained campaign, the U.S. military could hit Iranian state and security facilities, not just nuclear infrastructure, one of the officials said. The official declined to provide specific details. Experts say the risk to U.S. forces would be far greater in such an operation against Iran, which boasts a formidable arsenal of missiles. Retaliatory Iranian strikes also increase the risk of a regional conflict. The same official said the United States fully expected Iran to retaliate, leading to back-to-back and forth strikes and reprisals over time. The White House and Pentagon did not respond to questions about the risks of retaliation or regional conflict. Trump has repeatedly threatened to bomb Iran over its nuclear and ballistic missiles programs and the crushing of internal dissent. On Thursday, he warned the alternative to a diplomatic solution would be very traumatic, very traumatic. Iran's Revolutionary Guard has warned that in case of strikes on Iranian territory, it could retaliate against any U.S. military base. The U.S. maintains bases throughout the Middle East, including in Jordan, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, the United Arab Emirates, and Turkey. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met Trump for talks in Washington on Wednesday, saying that if an agreement with Iran were reached, it must include the elements that are vital to Israel. Iran has said it is prepared to discuss curbs on its nuclear program in exchange for lifting sanctions, but has ruled out linking the issue to missiles. On Saturday, Iranian opposition figure Reza Pahlavi said U.S. military intervention in Iran could save lives and urged Washington not to spend too long negotiating with Tehran's clerical rulers on a nuclear deal. The exiled son of Iran's toppled Shah told Reuters in an interview there were signs that the Iranian government was on the brink of collapse and that an attack could weaken it or accelerate its fall. We are hoping that this attack will expedite the process and the people can be finally back in the streets and take it all the way to the ultimate regime's downfall, said Pahlavi, who is based in the United States and has lived outside Iran since before his father was toppled in the 1979 Islamic Revolution. And that's all the time we have for today. Stay safe and thank you for listening.